Welcome to .NET Rambles, a weekly podcast where Andy and Rowan discuss all things .NET related. Hello, Rowan. How are you doing?
Really well, Andy. How are you doing? It's been a little bit of a break. We've had some time off for Easter.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, took some time for Easter. So yeah, getting back into it. But yeah, all good. I'm good. How are you doing with everything? Everything going well?
Everything's going very well. Thanks. Yeah, very well.
Good.
We've been looking at an interesting area or an interesting library in .NET that we can get into in a second.
We have indeed.
But before that, I believe you've got some random facts for us.
I have. I've got a random fact that actually relates to the thing we're going to talk about, which was quite cool. So I was quite chuffed I found this. So, and again, I've done what I normally do. I found a random fact that I'm going to find really hard to pronounce.
So brilliant.
I'll give it a go. But at least I can't insult anybody this time because it's not about people. It's an animal. So that's all right. A random fact is there are around 393 species of parrots.
393, wow.
393, loads of them, isn't there? Loads of them.
That's a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, there are a lot of different types of parrots out there. Most of them are found in tropical and subtropical surroundings, so they've obviously made the right choice. They've not bothered being in the UK.
It's all about lifestyle. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's three different families of parrots. So you've got the Psittacoidea, which I think I've got right.
That's well done.
Website told me to pronounce it right.
Psittacoidea, okay.
Psittacoidea. Yep. And they're known as true parrots.
Yeah.
And then you've got the Cacatoidea, which are cockatoos, and Strigopoidea, which are New Zealand parrots. So I'm hoping I pronounce them right. But
well done. So brilliant. Very interesting.
Yeah, they're different families. Yeah, so it's quite interesting, isn't it? So yeah.
And please don't forget my favourite parrot, the Flamen Galah.
Flamen Galah.
Which family does that fall into? I reckon it's got to be a true parrot.
I would think
it?
That's a true parrot. Yeah.
It has to be a true parrot. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. Indigenous to Australia. So.
Absolutely.
Good so, stuff. Yeah, well, cool. So, that's it. So I said that related to sort of what we were going to talk about today. So the library we're talking about is Poly. So there's a library in .NET called Poly.
Poly.net,
So I think I'm going to... I'll say what it is, and basically what I'm going to say is straight from their sort of GitHub page, but it's basically a resilience and transient fault handling library that allows developers to express policies such as retry, circuit breaker, timeout, bulkhead isolation, and fallback in a fluent and thread safe manner, which sounds brilliant. But I know you did something with it the other day, so I'm going to ask you to explain what that means. There's lots of words in there that you'll go, what?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, it's a brilliant library that allows you to get your code to handle things like transient. So coming back to some of those words that you mentioned, transient faults. Mm-hmm. A transient fault is just basically a fault that happens transiently and then stops and then recovers. So things like if you're making a HTTP call and the network drops out momentarily. Mm-hmm. Your call might fail, but if you try again within, a couple of hundred milliseconds, that call might succeed. That might be known as a transient fault.
Gotcha.
The other thing you mentioned there is resilience. Well, resilience is all about being able to handle things that drop out. If you call your database, for example, and for one reason or another, the database doesn't respond, but, if you try and call it again, it might respond. Your code was able to handle that, well, then your code would be more resilient. So Poly is a framework or a library that allows you to handle transient faults and make your code base more resilient. And it's not just that transient fault or that retry sort of pattern that it supports. You mentioned some other things like circuit breakers and timeouts and bulkhead isolation and fallbacks and even caching that it'll help you do. But we can sort of step through each of those use cases or policies a bit more.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's okay. So, yeah. So the retry, I've been in situations where that would be really handy to, like you say, where, database either is busy or it's not responding or, there's some faults that, even I've seen it come back from SQL Server before it says, sorry, this has failed, please try again. So, that'd be an ideal opportunity to do it automatically rather than show a user that error. So that'd be quite cool. So, when you're calling out third-party services, things like that, it could be quite good to use that retry. So, yeah, what are the other policies that you can do? What else can you do with it then? You said there's other ones.
So I guess we can step through each one of them, but just sure. to run through them again. There are patterns or policies such as a circuit breaker, a timeout policy if you wanted to, you know, if you want to make a call and then, right. you know, makes sense, yeah. and wait a certain amount of time and don't wait any longer. There's a policy called bulkhead isolation, which is all about sort of limiting concurrent requests to a certain number. There's a thing called a fallback policy. So if something fails, you could fall back to execute some other code in its place. There's even caching. So should we maybe look at each one of those in a bit more detail?
Yeah, I think it'd be useful to sort of go through each one and sort of see, yeah, where would you use it and why. Obviously, we've touched on the, I think the retry is probably the first one. We've sort of touched on that, but yeah, that's probably a very common one, probably why they put it at the top of the list.
It is, isn't it? And it's the easiest one to sort of think through, I guess, and to think through the recovery process for it. And that's simply where you might have an error that only happens for a short period of time, and simply retrying that same operation is going to succeed eventually. So poly allows you to retry, a certain number of times, or it's even got a retry forever policy in there where you can just keep retrying until it does succeed.
So if you've got to get that complete, you would retry it forever, but
just keep retrying. It's obviously going to depend on what you're doing and the particular use case. If you're writing stuff to a database, you don't want to retry forever. In case, you know, part of your operation succeeds and you retry and you're changing data, in a way that you don't want to change it. You've got to think about item potency and that sort of stuff when you're
About retries. Of course, that all comes into it then, doesn't it? If you're retrying these things, if something got through, but you didn't think it got through. Have to be a bit careful about that. So, and I think with these retries, obviously you don't want to hammer sort of a database. I guess you've got like backoff strategies. So you can say, retry this certain number of times, but, you know, delay my retry for a few seconds or something like that.
Exactly that. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. And that's all built into Poly and into these policies. So there's a few different sort of out of the box retry policies that you can use. I mentioned the retry forever. There is a retry policy where you can specify a certain number of times and a time span to wait in between each of the retries, which is quite nice. Yeah. So you could do exactly as you explained. Okay. You could try, waiting 100 milliseconds after the first failure and retrying again, and then waiting, 500 milliseconds, and then waiting, 2 seconds. And then after those three retries, those staggered retries, then you could fail.
I do like on the retry as well. That with the retry, they've got, I've just noticed they've got this also known as. So the retry, they call it, maybe it's just a blip.
That's a good way to describe it, isn't it? Yeah, they've got, there's quite a nice table actually on the GitHub site in the documentation that goes through each of these policies, explains, gives a bit of a technical overview, but that AKA column is quite useful, isn't it?
Cool. Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Nice little summary, yeah. That's the retry sort of family. And there's, all of these policies are really flexible, but that's, I guess, is the easiest one to think through how you'd recover from a transient fault. Hopefully you'd retry and then eventually it will work. Yeah. The next one to think about is a circuit breaker, and I guess that's slightly more complicated to think through, but that would be used in the case where your system is seriously struggling. And rather than retrying stuff over and over and over and stacking up the requests all with retries, you'd rather just fail fast. So the fail fast option is better for your system's health overall, rather than just loading it up with lots of stuff, retrying that's never gonna pass. Okay. And it's interesting, the AKA column that we're talking about in the documentation there saying is they've got stop doing it if it hurts, give the system a break. So if you've got a massive, massive problem, and particularly if each request is failing, but it might be sucking up resources as it's doing it. So if your database is struggling, you've got some rogue sort of queries that are being executed by your code, and retrying that's just going to suck up resources in your system. You want to just kill everything. And so the circuit breaker, again, the policies are really flexible, so you can configure the circuit breaker to for the circuit to be open, and for all the requests to fail, under a certain condition, and then you can configure the circuit to then close and then let the request through when a certain condition sort of changes. So that's really cool. Really good for, you know, more typically for higher traffic systems.
Yeah, so it'd be quite easy to sort of, if you've got the circuit breaker pattern in there, you could quite easily, like you say, if it's open, you can easily return a message saying, sorry, system's too busy to respond or whatever. Yeah. And it's a nicer experience for the user and the system.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, and I think ultimately all of these policies, and coming back to that description of what Poly's all about, you know, a resilience library, it's all about making your software and your code base more resilient, which is ultimately going to result in happier users at the end of it, which is why we do all this stuff. Yeah. So that's the circuit breaker. Mm-hmm. The next one we mentioned is timeout. Timeout's a bit, you know, it's fairly straightforward, and that is simply is about executing some code, waiting a certain amount of time, and if a success result is unlikely beyond that time, then you'll want to fail. So again, typically by default, the .NET framework has timeouts built in for lots of different things. So, you know, the HTTP client's got a default timeout built in.
Yeah, it's a fairly common one, isn't it? Databases have it.
I mean, great. The .NET database ADO client's got that built in, but you don't want to wait forever. Particularly if, you know, the longer the time goes on, the less likely you are to receive a successful result. So, and the AKA column for that on the documentation is simply don't wait forever, which is exactly right. So you can do that. You can configure policies using Poly for timeout operations, which is really good. Bulkhead isolation is the next policy. Bulkhead isolation is all about funneling concurrent usages down to a certain sort of threshold or a certain level. So the AKA column there is saying one fault shouldn't sink the whole ship. So it's probably best if I sort of just read through the technical description of it. But it says when a process faults, multiple fanning calls can stack up if they're unbounded and can then easily swamp resources. So, you know, things like threads and CPU and memory on the host. And this can then affect the performance more widely by starving other operations, bringing down the host and causing like a cascading failure.
Okay, I was going to say this sort of thing, when you say like, when a process faults, multiple failing calls, it sounded like cascading failures basically, you know, you can't talk to something which then goes back up the chain and, you know, fails there and then carries on failing further up. So, yeah, okay.
Exactly.
That's the way to stop it. Nice.
Exactly. So the bulkhead isolation is all about constraining the actions to a fixed sort of resource pool that, you know, if you think about, you know, what a bulkhead is on a you know, in an aeroplane, for example, when you walk through the bulkhead, things get, you know, the walkway gets thinner, doesn't it? So if you imagine requests coming through a system, you're basically pushing it through a bulkhead and you're limiting those requests through, which is quite a nice option.
Nice.
What's the next one? The next one is rate limiting. So again, you can limit the rate at which your system handles requests, and the rate limit policy is one way that you can do that. So yeah, the way the Poly guys describe it in the AKA column is slow down a bit. Again, if you're dealing with things that can't necessarily handle a whole load of concurrent requests, you might want to just rate limit things. So
if you know your system has got sort of a limit, you could put this in there to actually make sure you never go over that.
Particularly if you're dealing, maybe if you're interfacing with legacy resources or legacy systems that aren't particularly responsive. I remember actually you and I have worked on something similarly. It was in a JavaScript context though, wasn't it? Where we came across some code that was quite clever code that rate limited clicks by users. And said if you receive more than this, you know, more than a double click in a certain time frame, then just consider it a double click. And that's quite a nice, you know, a nice example of where you might want to rate limit something. So you've got rate limit policies available. There's a cache built in, so you can set up a cache policy, which is quite nice. There's no distributed cache sort of functionality built in, because obviously that would require sort of extra infrastructure. But you can store stuff in a cache, which is quite nice.
Not something I would have thought you'd get in there, to be honest. That wouldn't be the first thing that came to mind, but that's a really nice policy to have in there.
It is quite nice, isn't it? It feels like, you know, something they've added in, you know, probably not as one of the core policies, but one that's just very useful to have.
And the AKA for that one?
You've asked that one before, which is quite nice.
Good.
Yeah, exactly. The next one we already touched on, but you can implement fallback policies. So if things fail, well, then you can have a backup plan, basically. So, you know, if your delegate executes and throws an exception, then you can configure the policy to then execute some other code under that, you know, under that sort of use case. And yeah, the AKA for that is basically degrade gracefully.
And that's quite a nice thing to have, because obviously I've seen more patterns coming out of things like this where, you know, everybody assumes everything's going to work, and unfortunately the failure doesn't really get tested until it's in the live system and it does fail for real. So and then obviously you've got no fallback. It's just a nice error message, or, you know, some sort of bad thing happening somewhere that just stops, or maybe just people, you know, not seeing anything happening and things stacking up and going wrong horribly. So
exactly,
that'd be quite a nice thing to implement and make sure it's always dealt with.
Absolutely, and it comes back to this idea of resilience, doesn't it? And that's what Poly really allows you to build into your code base, is this idea of resilience, and particularly in this day and age where we're using external libraries. Well, Poly's a good example of that, but we tend to be interfacing with lots of other bits and pieces and components, you know, third-party APIs, HTTP calls, you know, going left, right, and center. Certainly with things like, you know, a microservice architecture where you're talking to other services all the time. This stuff is just really important. You know, Poly gives a lot of options for making your code base resilient. And then finally, there's a policy wrap policy, which basically allows you to stack up any of the policies that we've talked about and use them together. So you might want to, you know, just as a quick example off the top of my head, you might want to have a retry policy, try three times. And then if that continues to fail after the third retry, you might want a fallback. So you could stack up a retry and a fallback policy together using a policy wrap policy, which is quite nice.
Okay.
The AKA for that is defense in depth, which is quite a good way to describe it.
Okay. So yeah, so you're not limited to just one of these. You can actually wrap them up together to give you more defense, as they say. So
And you can stack them up together, which is quite nice. It's worthwhile mentioning, actually, as well as each one of those policies, and that policy wrap is a policy in itself. It's sort of a, you know, wraps multiple policies. You can also use a thing called a policy registry in Poly, which allows you to configure one or more policies and register them with, you know, something like your dependency injection container, and then inject that registry into different parts of your app, and then ask that registry for different named policies. So you can use a policy over and over and over without having to configure it each time.
Reuse of it all. Configure it once, reuse it everywhere. And I'm guessing that touches on, I was going to ask you about this in a minute, but if you said it's injected, obviously I'm assuming then if you're injecting it, it lends itself to unit testing, and
absolutely,
you can mock these out, and
you can mock the policies out. Yeah, exactly.
Right. Nice.
Which I guess is a really good selling sort of point in itself, isn't it?
In that
this policy-based API lends itself quite nicely to being injectable, thus being testable and modular and decoupled and all of those good things that we strive for with our software.
Nice. Okay. So we've sort of touched on it, but the next thing we put here then was, you know, when would you think about using it? When would you actually look at using it in a system? Is it something you'd use all the time? Is it, you know, does something happen and you drop it in? When would you sort of realize that actually Poly would sort of get us out of this hole, or Poly's going to be a really nice thing to put here?
Yeah, I think it comes back to any time where you're interfacing or you're communicating with something, some external system that you can't guarantee is going to succeed, or that you can't guarantee your call to is going to succeed. Okay. So if you're talking to a database, interestingly, actually, the entity framework has got retry sort of policy built into it, or retry functionality built into it, mm-hmm. For that very reason. Because you know, if you're interfacing with a database, there's no way that you can guarantee that it's always going to be up. Okay. But coming back to the question, anytime you're interfacing with an external system like a database or a hard disk or a third-party API, or you're making HTTP calls, it's worthwhile considering putting poly in. And it's interesting because quite often we start off. You know, software evolves, doesn't it, over time, and you iterate on it. Quite often we might start off with something like a try catch around something that we know okay. may fail. Yeah. And then over time we wish that we had a bit more sophistication around that try catch functionality, uh-huh. you know, with things like back off retries, or, you know, yeah. bulkhead isolation, right. Or even a circuit breaker. Mm-hmm. And it's that sort of stuff that getting poly in will guard against and just make it really easy to handle in the future, yeah. Particularly okay. if you set it up in such a way that your policy is injected and your policy is configured outside of your code logic or your business logic. Mm-hmm. You can tweak the policy or add another policy, or, you know, add a wrap-up policy as time goes on without actually mm-hmm. changing your, you know, your actual
yeah
okay. you know, your logic, yeah, which again, coming back to this idea of decoupling and you know, and solid principles and all of that, poly yeah. lends itself to that really well. So okay. yeah, to answer mm-hmm. the question, anytime you're sort of you're interfacing with something that you can't control is a good excuse to get
fair
it
enough. Really. Yeah. Yeah, makes sense. And you sort of yeah so what I was going to come up with next is like, yeah, I was exactly going to say that, why not just wrap a try catch around it, but you know, you touched on that it doesn't give you half the functionality. And you know, at some point you are going to go, oh, actually, we don't just want to fail. We want to retry this, or actually, I'd like to retry it a few times and then fail it, or yeah, I'll retry it once and then back off and then yeah. retry it again. So yeah, all of this stuff is already built in. So that's, yeah, really good reason. And yeah, I think building that sort of thing yourself would be very, very time consuming and
exactly, error prone. Exactly. So. Let alone making it testable and yeah, decoupling absolutely. It from the actual business logic that, yeah. that you're trying to, yeah. you're trying right. to model as well. Yeah.
Okay. So, let's go through a quick example of actually using it. How would you go about adding this? You know, you've got a system, you decided that this is a good library to include, you know, how would you start with it? What would you do?
Yeah, sure. So it's really easy. Like most libraries, comes as a NuGet package. So you install the NuGet package, and we can put a link to the NuGet package in the yeah. notes in the show. And then you have a think about the type or types of policies that you need to apply. And then it is a matter of wiring up a policy to a particular error condition. So there's various ways that you can do that in code. The simplest way is to use the built-in poly APIs. So there's a policy namespace with some static sort of APIs around it, where you can tell Poly to handle particular types of exceptions, mm-hmm. you know, one or more exceptions. So you might be handling, you know, a web exception or a HTTP exception, or, you know, a SQL exception. Yeah. So you can tell Poly what exception to handle, and then you tell Poly what policy to apply, mm-hmm. And you've got a load of different APIs around configuring the policy, or using the out-of-the-box sort of, you know, retry policies, for example. Right. Nice. And then you tell Poly what code it needs to execute off the back of that. That's sort of the simple workflow for setting it up, bearing in mind that once you've configured a handler to handle one or more exceptions and a policy, at that point you get yourself a Poly policy, which can be registered with the dependency okay. injection
so
container.
So if you do this exactly the same way, whether you put the code directly in or whether you actually create it as a policy and then register it, same setup.
Yeah. I guess what I'm getting at is you can configure a policy and have that injected into your code And then in your code where you make your database call or you, you know, you make your HTTP call,
yeah.
Where you'd like to use your policy, you then call your policy.execute or execute async. Mm-hmm. And that method simply takes your delegate, the code that you need to execute and
right.
Need to execute as part of that policy. So,
okay.
Yeah, you can either, you can, you know, if you were just doing a quick and dirty sort of example, you could create your policy and execute it all in one hit, all in your class if you didn't care about injecting the policy. Yeah, but if you're a bit more sort of mindful of wanting to decouple it and register yeah. the policy, you could register okay. the policy, you know, in your startup.cs, for example, and then inject that policy or a policy registry that I mentioned yeah. before, and then use your policy wherever you need to in right. within your code, if that makes okay. sense.
Yeah, no, it sounds like nice and easy to get started. So you can start either way. It sounds like it'd be a nice thing to go and play about with quickly in a little console app or yeah. little, you know, web app and just play with it. And then, yeah, when you do it properly, you can inject it and
yeah.
do everything, all the good stuff you need to do. Okay,
make
cool.
Make it testable and decoupled. Yeah. yeah, absolutely.
Okay, and when we were talking about this before, you mentioned that actually the .NET Core HTTP client uses this or integrates with it, or you know, there's
yeah,
something around that?
It does, and the official, you know, Microsoft documentation has some really good instructions on how you can use the .NET Core HTTP client and how you can easily configure it to use a retry policy. So that's as simple as obviously using the, you know, it has to be a .NET Core or greater mm-hmm. Code base, yeah. Yeah. But you can simply install a NuGet package, which is the Microsoft.extensions.http.poly NuGet package, mm-hmm. And that brings with it a whole load of extension methods that you can use in your startup.cs. Mm-hmm. And there's an extension method, for example, called add policy handler, that is very similar to the Poly APIs, mm-hmm. in that you can you can basically wire in a Poly policy, which is really useful.
Yeah, wow. Right.
So there's a good example on the Microsoft site about how to set up a simple retry policy. Yeah. But you can take things further, and you can even go from a simple retry policy to a thing called a jitter strategy. Mm-hmm. So where you would use that jitter strategy is in the case where you've got a super sort of high traffic system, mm-hmm. And if you have an error with loads of requests hitting that system at once, you can get into a situation where a lot of those requests start retrying at the same time, therefore placing a hell of a lot of load on right. your system, all of those retry points. So you can implement a thing called a jitter strategy, which basically staggers those retries across mm-hmm. all the different requests. So,
okay.
You know, that's yeah. getting quite sophisticated.
Yeah. So this would be a case of, yeah, like you say, if you've got lots of things hitting you at once, if they're failing for whatever reason, they're yeah. all going to back off at the same time period. Yeah. So they're all going to retry at the yeah. same time.
Yeah, yeah, potentially. Okay. Yeah. So to guard against that, that's where you'd look mm-hmm. at something like a jitter strategy. Mm-hmm. And the .NET documentation around the HTTP client has some really simple instructions around how to implement or decorate your retry policy with a jitter back off policy,
mm-hmm. nice.
Which is quite cool. So, and mm-hmm. it's a couple of lines of code. It's really simple to get going.
Yeah,
so
yeah, easy to implement and yeah, gives you a huge benefit.
It's absolutely. Yeah. It's tried and tested and it's yeah. mature. And if Microsoft are using it in the HTTP client and they're happy to include it in the official documentation, yeah. then it shows that it's, you know, it's worthwhile.
Absolutely. It's quite, yeah, that's quite a selling point, isn't it, really? That, you know, if they're using it, it's got to be pretty good.
So. Absolutely. So coming back to that question around, well, couldn't we just put a try catch in? Well, you know, obviously not for this sort of use case.
For that. Yeah. No, okay, cool. And what can you, I take it, is this just a .NET Core library or can this be used in framework versions as well?
It can be used in framework versions. I think it targets everything from .NET 4 and above, basically. So .NET 4, I think there's direct targets for 4.6.1 and 4.7.2, but it also targets .NET Standard 1.1 and 2.0+. So that covers all your .NET cores and Mono and Xamarin and UWP targets and all that sort of stuff. So, unless you're on a really old version of .NET framework, you should be okay.
So, yeah, no reason not really to use this, as, you know, it's not you haven't got to wait till you upgrade to core. You could actually put this in your existing framework.
Exactly. Exactly. Or whatever. And it's right. You know, it's incredibly worthwhile. Once you've got that sort of configuration code in there, then you've got the ability to, you know, to tweak the policies and add more policies and that sort of stuff as time goes on. So it's, you know, it's well worth looking at. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And I looked at this earlier. They've got, obviously it's up on GitHub, so it's open source. You can go and have a look at all the code, see how they do it. If you jump on GitHub and search for Poly, you should be able to find it.
Yeah.
And there's loads of it. I've been looking on their GitHub webpage. There are loads and loads of examples about how to get started with it and how to use all these different policies.
Really good, isn't it? The documentation around it is brilliant. Yeah. The repo name is app-vnext/poly. It's well worth a look. Great library, nice and mature and used all over the place. So well worth a look.
And interestingly, they've linked to another library on there called Simi, which is a chaos engineering and fault injection.
So, brilliant.
That might be something else we need to have a look at.
That could be another episode in itself, couldn't it?
Sounds fun. Yeah, cool. Well, excellent. I think that's really, really good sort of review of what Poly can do and why you'd use it and the various things you can do with it. So appreciate that. Thanks for going through that. That's really good.
Oh, no trouble. It's a library that I really love, and I think the APIs are really been really well designed, very easy to use, and it helps you abide by all those, you know, those core principles that we talked about. You know, all those solid principles around being able to decouple. Yeah. Stuff and making stuff testable and modular and all of that. So yeah, brilliant framework. And it's a library that I love.
Go out there and give it a try, definitely. So
absolutely
excellent. Okay, so another library, this OS project of the week, another one we want to try. I mean, obviously Poly is open source, so could have cheated and just put it on there, but
use that.
I didn't this week, so I picked out a thing called spectre.console, and it's basically a library, again, NuGet package you can add to your console apps. And it basically allows you to create, in their words, create beautiful console applications. So you can output text with different colors, with styling like bold, italic, blinking, or blast from the past, blinking
nice.
Text.
Yeah.
So, and obviously you can do a few of these things with the console anyway. You've obviously got access to do these things, but this sort of wraps it up in a really nice way where, when you actually have a look at it, again, if you go onto GitHub and look for spectre.console, things you can do. It creates tables, really nicely laid out tables, ASCII images, trees, widgets, all sorts. So, if you're building text, a console.
Brilliant, yeah. Justified text, left, center, right, all stuff that would be is actually quite hard to do in a console app.
Exactly, that's it. Yeah. Doing these things in the past has been really difficult. So, yeah, if you're doing that at all, it's well worth a look just to give it a try. I'm trying to use it in a couple of projects now. So, hopefully I'll maybe be able to feedback. Might even have a little bit of it in an episode soon. We can talk about it and sort of see how I got on with it. So
brilliant. Yeah, it looks really good. Things like tables and trees. I'm just looking at the site now. Yeah. Charts, with bar charts.
That's really cool. Isn't it?
Even things like formatting exceptions. So if you're looking at a stack trace, highlighting the error message in a different color. And through the stack, each of the methods that's called through the stack is highlighted in a different color, and the line numbers in a different color. Really cool.
Nice stuff, isn't it? So worth giving it a try. So excellent. Right, well, we'll wrap it up there. So that's great again. Thanks for that. Appreciate your time. And
it's been a pleasure as always.
Speak again soon, no doubt.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. We'll speak again soon. Cheers, Andy.
Cheers, Ryan. Speak soon.
Bye.